stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm dedicating the whole show to a review of the unusual musical Contact, now playing at the Oslo Repertory Theater in Sarasota, Florida, and an interview I did with Ian Webb, who is the director of the ballet company, which is housed at the Oslo. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about becoming who you really are. If you've been listening to the show, you know that I believe that we are all hiding parts of ourselves. Some of us are hiding large parts of ourselves. We're hiding them, not only from the world, from other people, but from ourselves as well. And of course, that is the definition of denial, that we keep secrets from ourselves. Also, if you've been listening, you know that I believe that we're doing this for a very good reason, because we learned early in our life that these parts which we are hiding, if we had exposed them, would have led us in for embarrassment, danger, maybe even threat to our lives. So we hid them. First from whoever needed it to be hidden from, and then finally from ourselves. The problem is that often these qualities which we have hidden are important to our survival. We need them, and not having access to them undermines the happiness that would otherwise be available to us. Today, I'm playing a review by Sharon Leslie of a play called Contact. It is a musical, but it is a one-of-a-kind musical. It is celebrating its 10th year, having won the Tony as the best musical on Broadway 10 years ago. And right now it is playing at the Oslo Repertory Theater in Sarasota, Florida. It is playing between now and November 22nd, and I want to tell you that if you haven't seen it and you are anywhere near Sarasota, Florida, it is worth whatever you have to do to get here to see it. It's extraordinary. You will hear a really kind of detailed review from Sharon in just a minute. Usually I spend the first half of the show talking about why we can't get access to all of the parts of ourselves. But today I'm going to play the review of Contact, a play which is so amazingly like, makes the point of how we keep secrets from ourselves. And it makes the point primarily in dance, which is extraordinary. And then I'm going to follow the review with an interview that I did with Ian Webb, who is the director of the Sarasota Ballet Company. And Ian's story is also the story of someone who is doing what he was meant to do, even though he found it rather late in life for a ballet dancer. It's a fascinating story. Let me, in case I forget, to tell you that if you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. And now I think, without saying anything else, I'm simply going to play you Sharon's review, followed by my interview with Ian.
Hi, this is Sharon Leslie with a review of Contact. Three stories, three dilemmas, one great night of theater. In Contact, the dance musical currently playing at the Oslo Theater, humans take off into their own fantasy world like airplanes, flying through the air. But planes must descend toward Earth, and when their wheels touch the ground, contact, humans must face reality. The juxtaposing of fantasy and reality, dreams and hard truths, the unspoken with the spoken, makes for an evening of theater that had me saying, wow. The first dance vignette, Swinging, takes off from the famous Fragonard painting, The Girl on a Swing. A love triangle is played between an aristocrat, a servant, and a lady. She has a delicious sexual encounter, literally swinging with the servant while the aristocrat is off stage. Naturally, the musical background is jazz. The surprise? The two men have traded places for the hijinks, thus showing rather explicitly how acting out a sexual fantasy can be quite exciting. In the second dance vignette, Did You Move? An overbearing gangster type takes his wife out to dinner. She's a bird in a cage that yearns to fly. When the gangster goes off for food, she dances a fantasy relationship with a head waiter to popular classical music selections. Humor is interspersed in this mad romp filled with danger and imagined affection, while lots of other characters and subplots emerge among the two other restaurant tables. For the wife, fantasy is used as a means of inner survival. The third vignette, danced to mostly rock music, is called Contact. A stressed-out, lonely advertising genius on the verge of suicide fantasizes about dancing with his dream woman, the girl in the yellow dress. Can he find the courage to make contact? Can he win over all the other males vying to dance with her? In his fantasy, he eventually does. Does this help him in real life? Actually, yes. Is there a happy ending? Who knows? He makes the first step by dancing with a real woman dressed in a yellow terry cloth robe, which is the victory. They say 80% of what we communicate is nonverbal. Contact explores storytelling through the mostly unspoken. The dancing is spectacular. And I like the mixing of many different styles of music, jazz, rock, classical, which I think is an expression of our musical tastes now. Most people I know listen to all kinds of music. Why not dance to it all? While the show may break some of the usual definitions of a musical, it is all theater. Go for great performances, choreography, drama, and hot bodies.
Okay, so I'm here with Ian Webb, who is the director of the Sarasota Ballet. I interview people who have made their living or their life with their art. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's true for you.
It is.
Yes, I know, I know. So I always start by asking people the same question. How did this happen? How did you find it? How did it find you?
It was really a case of my mother had a ballet school, and she had one boy in the school who wouldn't go on stage unless there was somebody else, another boy up there. So I think she gave me a little bit of extra pocket money.
How old were you?
I was 14.
You were 14 when you started to dance?
Yeah, yeah.
So before that, she didn't show any interest in you?
It was literally, and when I did agree to do it, it was under the strict understanding that it had nothing to do with ballet.
It was a business deal with you and your mother?
Yeah, totally, totally.
Amazing!
And then there was one of my mother's close friends who was a very good teacher, happened to be there the day, and she apparently said to my mother, she said, "Well, have you seen your son? He's the best one in the studio." And I was at the back, poncing around, taking the mickey out of the girls. So then this teacher and my mother then went to speak to my father to see whether...
Do you mind if you have a son who dances? And oh my God, it's Billy Elliot, all of them.
Well, it actually, you know, that film is very difficult for me to watch because it's very much...
Oh, my dear, you know, I was teasing, but it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, my father, he was born in this town called Scarborough, and that's where all this took place. And he moved the family to York so that I could do ballet lessons.
Wow.
But he never admitted that I did it. He would come and he would watch. He would never really enjoyed watching me. He just felt very uncomfortable about it. He'd go and watch my wife. And whoever was dancing with her, he thought was great. And I would do exactly the same role the next night, and he no comment. He just didn't like it.
Okay, so back up now. Are you an only child?
No, no.
You have?
I've got an elder brother who's never seen me dance.
Oh.
And a younger sister.
Oh, my God, Ian.
So it was very much, you know, my father moved everybody. He got extra jobs to try and help pay because we had
Because he was
money.
A good guy.
Yeah, yeah, he said he'd do everything he could, but he didn't actually like the idea or agree with it.
Wow. So that is why, of course, your mother never thought to mention dancing to you or your brother.
Yeah,
because, right. So it was okay, it was a girl's thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was that whole stigma.
Right.
Know.
Wow. So, okay, so you're 14, you do this thing for extra pocket money, mm-hmm. and well, do you like it?
I liked the thing that, the only thing that I really knew at that time was I liked the physical challenge. I liked the, you know, the
athleticism. Yeah.
So that was, and you know, being from the north of England, we're known as being a little bit stubborn and very much sort of down the line. So I started when I was nearly 15 ballet.
My God, that is so late.
And then I suddenly went, well, okay, this is what I want to do, so I'm going to go to the Royal Ballet School to audition. So a friend's parents took me down there. They were brought in, and this apparently the head of the school said to them, "Well, your son is, you know, we'd like to offer your son a place at the Royal Ballet School, but the other guy you brought down with you, he's got no talent whatsoever," which was me.
You're kidding.
So I went away to train at another school in London, and then just because if somebody says...
You can't do it.
it's there forever. So I went back 2 years later and auditioned again. And they made an exception and took me in because I was older by that stage. I was 18. And then a year later, I joined the company.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, if somebody says no,
yeah,
then I'll try. And if I really believe in it and it should happen, I will do everything I can.
Well, apparently.
To make that. And then I was there for 18 years.
That's an amazing story. That, as you almost certainly know, that's a tremendously atypical
yeah.
way to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, so you began to dance when you were 14. You were still very young, but did you have any idea what you wanted to do at that point?
No, I mean, basically, in those days, you never really planned that much ahead.
Right.
But suddenly, as soon as I started doing it ballet once a week and then twice a week, then it really was something that I got lost in. I knew there was, I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew that it was right.
Yeah, it felt.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so not only your father, but your brother. What about your friends?
No one basically, you know, when you're sort of 14 and you always have your best mate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And best friends at that age always fall out. Well, I told him that I was doing ballet, and of course we fell out like a month later, and he got up in the middle of the class and said, "Ian Webb does ballet." And I got up and I denied it, and we had this whole big tension thing. And then when I moved to London, he came up to me and he said, "You told me you'd stop doing it." And I just used to keep it quiet from everybody. No one knew.
Oh, Ian.
And it was like...
That's very hard.
It is, but on the other hand, you know, it just wasn't worth the fight. The fight, yeah. And it would have been a physical fight with most of them.
So you had your friends, you had your school, you had your life, and then you had this thing on the side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. So, okay, so this is what I hear. What I hear is that you didn't know, but ballet belonged to you. You belonged to it.
There was something that... was right.
Right.
There was something. And at that stage, it was very much the physical thing that I enjoyed. But then, quite soon afterwards, then I started to get more interested in the history and the artistry. And the artistry is the thing that's more important to me than the physical and technical thing. In a way.
Could you talk a little bit about what's the difference between the...
Well, what you do is, as dance has evolved, and it,
dance, the...
In ballet, the way it's, you know, from those early days when the man was there and he just hid behind
her. He picked her up.
And lifted her, and that was all he
right,
did.
Right.
Now, you had, like, you know, people like, you know, obviously Nureyev and Brezhnikov and those who were just the most extraordinary, fantastic people and dancers. And they turned the whole male dancer around where they you know, would jump in the air and it would be higher than anybody else. They would do more pirouettes. They would jump, you know, and spin. So that side of it is still what I enjoy. Or I used to be able to jump all over the place. But a lot of people took it where now the legs have to be against their ears. Everything is extended and the bodies are stretched. Well, when you come to do something like Giselle, that's not what it's about. Giselle was based, you know, was done in 1841. It has a style, it has a period. And what happens is dancers tend to come into there and think they have to bring in today's tricks.
They have to modernize
it. Yeah, and gimmicks and things. Well, it shouldn't be. There's ballets for those things.
Right.
I'm a purist in the sense that that has to be... done with the correct style and feeling and understanding. Otherwise, I won't do it.
It's so interesting because coming from where you came from, that you came to this is really kind of interesting. I mean, I would have expected you to, this is my inadequacy, of course, but I would have expected you to continue to focus on the physical aspect of it.
Well, I think because the physical side of it was... I was going to say it was easy, but it's not an easy profession. But I learned how to jump, and I had one of the highest jumps there was, and I could just, you know, bounce around all over the place. But it's the other side of it, and I think that a lot had to do also with, you know, in England we're kind of very fortunate because, you know, we have a lot of history there, not only of dance but of also theatre. And when I started touring with the Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet, at the same time the Royal Shakespeare Company was on tour. They would go to one city and then we would go in the next week. And I had a friend who was there, a very established actor, and he used to leave me little notes and things. And this is my very first tour. I was sort of, you know, very young. And he would come and see the performances, and then he would give me sort of corrections on the theatrical side of it, or the acting side.
Wow.
And I remember we'd always, you know, he'd come because he loved the art form. We would go out for tea the next day or something, and we'd go through it, and he'd say, well, you know, I thought this was very good, but, you know, one of the hardest things to do on stage is to stand still. And you kind of fidgeted, you moved a lot, and, you know, sometimes you're stronger if you just stand. And it progressed like that to the point where I did a leading role in London. It was the second leading role in this one ballet, and I got him tickets, and then I didn't see him for 2 days, 3 days. And I thought, that's very strange. I thought he might have been ill, so I called him. He answered, and I said, I thought maybe we were going to get together. He said, oh, we could do. I said, oh, did you come to the show? He said, yes. I said, oh, well, normally we, he said, well, I didn't think there was any point, really. He said, because I came to see the character, and I saw more of Ian than I did the character, so therefore I felt I'd already seen you, really.
Ooh.
And I said, you know, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you faced the audience, and you were the character. You turned your back, and you were you.
Ooh.
He said, so I felt I'd spent enough time with you during those 2 hours.
Ooh.
And I was relatively, you know, I just started to do things, and just started, and that was the most incredible lesson ever, you know, and then that's when I really then went much further into the roles and the understanding of it.
So he was so pivotal.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He could tell you things that you might have expected to get. Well, it's really interesting. You wouldn't get this from a...
You don't get it, I mean, because he was such... I mean, you know, he was an incredibly established actor with the Shakespeare Company at the National Theatre. He'd made movies, you know. And, you know, his passion was ballet, and he'd been in opera. He'd done everything. But the only time he ever did ballet was in our kitchen when he did Rothbart with Maggie while she was cooking the pasta. So he was very, well, very well respected, and so he was giving me all this for free.
Yeah, well, not only was he giving it to you for free, he was giving you something you wouldn't get from a choreographer. You wouldn't get it from another dancer.
Yeah.
You would only get it from somebody who had this theatrical...
That's right. So a lot of what we do here is to put that onto the dancers, so they know.
Yes.
And that was one of the... That I remember the first few rehearsals when I got here, when we were doing the two pigeons, and the principals were doing all the mime, and then they would do one mime to each other, and then they'd almost look at the audience,
yeah,
where the audience would be, you know. And I was going like, well, why are you doing that? I said, you have to forget the audience.
Yeah.
And you have to bring them into the room. Yeah. Don't go out. Certain ballets, certain roles, you go out to the audience, but others... You have to believe in it and commit. And it took a very long time for them to understand it. But I don't choreograph. I believe that you have to have the talent. You're born with that talent. And I wasn't born.
The talent to choreograph?
The talent to choreograph.
Uh-huh.
But what I... All that I'm doing is really introducing ballets that I was either brought up with, or had connections with, or have, where believe that piece is maybe, you know, is getting lost and needs to be revived and needs to be looked after, or bringing a new young person in of today to choreograph something. So I look at the whole, the historical and today's, and blend it together, and then I program them. I sort of one of the things I love is to devise a program where you get something where, if it's three ballets, you'll get something that is very classical. You'll get something very theatrical. And then something light-hearted. It's that combination that I think works. And that's what I enjoy doing. I was very fortunate that I fell, to use a funny term in the ballet world. I just was there, and I just was very fortunate. I was very lucky that I had the chances I had. I have, you know, wonderful memories of working with Sir Frederick Ashton, Dame Nanette de Valois, one-on-one. All these famous people, well, because they're no longer here, it's important that their ballets are looked after, their true essence and their how it was when they were alive and they were coaching us. And also for the dancers to know what it was like. So, you know, I always bring in people that have worked directly with those choreographers, so they'll pass on and say, well, when doing Giselle, obviously it was done in 1841. Now we're doing Sir Peter Wright's production, which is probably, in my opinion, definitely the best production in the world. He's been incredibly generous and supportive and said, well, you know, Margaret Barbieri, who's staging it, he said to her, he said, well, Maggie, he said, you know, it's going to be very difficult for you to stage or create a new production of it because you've danced my version more than anybody in the world.
Wow.
So why don't you just do mine? And this shows that I'm supporting Ian.
Right.
And believe in what Ian's doing. So this is, you know, we could never have dreamt. Sarasota Ballet could never have dreamt of having Sir Peter Wright's production. And it's wonderful. So we were coaching one of the dancers, Victoria Holland, who's one of my new principals. This is only her third year with the company, and she's going to be starring in Giselle. And Margaret went, well, you know, there are different versions and there are different, slight different looks to this. So she showed her a few and then she said, now which feels better for you? Because sometimes you've got to feel or look, you've got to find, you know, which works. So it was very early on and she was a very tentative Victoria and she said, well, I kind of felt that this is the one. And was very sort of holding back, not wanting to say. And Margaret said, "Well," she said, "Well, if it was good enough for Fontaine, then it's good enough for you." And that's what Fontaine did. And therefore, if it feels comfortable, that's the right one.
Wow.
You know, and because she was Margaret had been coached by Fontaine and was around with all these people, so they're getting.
Yeah. They get wow.
Direct connection, which unfortunately, you know, the very, very few companies do that, or
yeah.
have the resources, or have that, or that
have a
that,
person who has those connections.
Yeah, and have somebody in who's very passionate about that knowledge. You know,
has it to bring.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, even if you don't bring it directly, you know the people who can bring it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's a very special talent.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that's making our company very unique.
Yeah. I heard you and Michael talking that night at the media event,
mm-hmm.
and you said something that really interested me and I wanted to ask you about. You said you never had to audition.
No.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, in a way, I mean, I auditioned for the Royal Ballet School.
Right.
So that was actually, in hindsight, that was...
it's all right.
That was the audition.
You're forgiven.
But you see, I was told that I could only have a year at the Royal Ballet School.
Because of your age?
Because of my age. And then they had the most... Terry Westmoreland, who was one of the most incredible teachers... He used to teach the Royal Ballet Company, and he used to teach the top class in the school. You know, Nureyev, everybody always came to do his class. It was, you know, he was such an amazing teacher. He told the school that he wanted me to stay for another year and work with
him.
Wow. So then they made the exception. But somebody was then injured with the Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet. So I did 2 months and then went out on tour... and spent nearly the whole year on tour with Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet. We then had a guest teacher from Dutch National who was there, and I was talking to her, and I said, well, you know, the company finish in a week's time, and then 2 weeks later the school finishes, but I've got to look for a job. So she said, okay. So she spoke to the director of, actually Sir Peter Wright, and said, what's happening about the student, Ian Webb? And he went, oh, I'm not sure. So she went, oh, well, I'm going to offer him a job with Het National, with Dutch National in Amsterdam. The next day, there's a knock at the door, and I got a contract with Sash as well. So I didn't really audition.
I want to tell everybody that you're blushing slightly, well, and it's very sweet.
But it sort of, so then that happened, and then they were moving Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet up to Birmingham. Sir Frederick Ashton, he gave us permission to dance, I think it was 5 galas in South Africa. And that way my wife's mother lived there, and our son was going to have his first birthday, and she'd not seen him, so we did all this. So we went and danced, and then we came back to London, and instead of going and seeing Sir Fred, I went up to Yorkshire to see my parents, because they'd missed Jason's first birthday. And the next day we were up there, and it's suddenly on the news that Sir Fred had passed away. So I kind of missed seeing him to thank him and telling him all about South Africa and, you know, all this. So I went into the Royal Ballet to sort of, you know, sort out all the financials scenario with the galas. And I just happened to say to Iris Law, who was Anthony Dowell's PA and also Sir Fred's personal assistant, and she was very upset, obviously. And I said, oh, when the time is better, could I just speak to Anthony? And she looked at me. And then 2 days later, I got a phone call saying, well, come in and Anthony will see you. And I went in to see him and I said, well, look, you know, it's getting to the point where, you know, I'm not going to go to Birmingham. And I want to stop dancing. I just want to do more of the acting and character roles. And he said to me, he said that he knows about all my career. He'd never seen me dance the principal role in anything, but whenever he came to see the Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet, I was the one he always remembered because of my personality and the way I danced, and because of my connection with Sir Fred, he then offered me to go to Covent Garden, so I didn't really audition. And then I set up, my wife and I set up a charity to help dancers with HIV and AIDS. Mm. Because a lot of people that were close to us had passed away. A lot of, you know, like Nureyev, people like that, who we respected so much. And I felt we needed to do something for our own. And because of my upbringing, I was fed up of the stigma of the male dancer. I was fed up of everybody saying, you know, the virus is gay-related when it wasn't.
No.
And I thought, well, I'm going to just be the voice because I'm sort of...
Because I can.
Questioning
right.
all of
right.
it. So we set up that, and then we spoke to a young choreographer called Matthew Bourne. And, you know, now Matthew Bourne is... you know, one of the biggest names in modern dance in the world. He's been given Tony Awards and everything, but he came on board and we set this charity up. And then he asked me to be first on his board of directors, and then he asked me to be his rehearsal director. So...
Yes, yet again.
I moved just by chance. And then, again, after that, I was asked to go to Japan. And it was meant to be for 2.5 months to look after an Ashton Ballet. And I stayed there 8 years. And then I came here, and this was the first place I had to do to be interviewed or whatever.
Right, and here
you are. Apart from the Royal Ballet.
Right.
And it was very funny because I heard a little sort of whisper back that they were concerned because I didn't really sell myself. And I went in the next day and I said, well, you know, okay, let's start. And I said, well, could I start? Mm-hmm. I said, you know, I've heard something and I just want to see. I notice you've all got my CV
right
in front of you. Therefore, I don't need to speak about myself.
Yeah.
And my career happened. This is about a new start for the company. And it isn't about me. It's about the company. And it's about the dancers and what we're going to do here. So I'm not choreographing it.
I'm just teaching them the steps. I understand.
And the style and everything.
Choreographing as in making a new piece.
Yeah, a choreographer will make the steps up.
Right, I got it.
And we're just coming in where the steps have already
So you will teach.
Up. So I teach them that, yeah.
I got it. That's great. So do you want to say something about, well, about the season?
And we just came through a very difficult year. You know, you can't put any rose-tinted glasses on it.
It was
a very difficult year. If you look, Bali, Florida, which was in West Palm Beach, which was established long before here, they've closed. Two companies in Miami closed. Not Miami City Bali, they've cut back. But that's just in Florida.
Right.
So, you know, sort of through the whole nation, there's been a lot of companies that have been affected. So we've come out of that. We survived, but we're coming into doing a season now, which I still don't quite know how to address, really, because if we hadn't gone through such a bad year, if money was no problem,
right.
Everybody's dream, if money was no problem, I really don't believe we could afford to put a season on that we're going to do this year.
Really? So how are you doing it?
Well, people like Sir Peter Wright.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're giving it to you. Is that what you're saying?
You must do up. You know,
right. So you're saying...
So all... friends and contacts.
So are you saying it's not costing you what it might?
It's not costing us what it should do.
Aha, that's great.
So, you know, and for instance, you know, on the opening night of Giselle, or Thanksgiving weekend on the Friday, we've got two of the biggest ballet partnership in the world, Johan and Alina. They're actually the principals of the Royal Ballet. They're going to be flying in from Tokyo, where they're performing, to dance Friday night and Saturday night here. They're flying out, I think it's either Sunday or Monday, back to Tokyo to perform another performance in Tokyo and then back to London.
Oh, my.
And they're two of the biggest stars in the world. And when I looked at my budget, when some of the dancers left and everything, when I looked at my budget, this is not going to cost us a dollar over. I rang Johan and he said, if you need help, then I'm there.
Wow.
You know, we'd love to come. We'd love to come and help. Whatever you want, just tell me. You know, Christopher Wheeldon, who is in the New York Times nearly every week, he is this young guy. He was... at the Royal Ballet School, he was in the Royal Ballet Company. He then moved to New York and was in New York City Ballet. He became the resident choreographer for New York City Ballet. He set up his own company now. I said, oh, you know, Chris, I'd love to do something, you know, but I'm just going through hell here.
Right.
He said, why don't you just do this piece?
Oh, God.
Could never... have asked for something like that.
This is the result of the life that you've led.
Yeah. And Matthew Bourne.
Right.
We're going to be doing in January his boutique, which has never, ever been seen in America. He's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, do it. Why don't you do it?
This is the gift of having Ian Webb here.
I've just been very lucky. I've just been very lucky that people believe and they trust.
Yeah.
I think trust is quite a good thing, because I think right from the beginning they, you know, I won't put on a ballet if I don't believe it's going to be what it should be. I mean, when we looked at the economy and we looked at all the cutting back that we've had to do, you know, the question was brought up, well, you know, Giselle, you know, in Act Two, how many girls do you need? And I was like, well, it has to be 9 on each side. And they went, well, has it been done with less? Went, yes. Well, there you go. Do it with less, and therefore the salaries. And
right, you'll save.
And I said, no. They said, well, it's been done with less. I said, but we can't do it with less.
Yeah, it hasn't been done well with less.
Then I'd rather not do it, and I'll do it next year or the year after,
right.
When hopefully, you know, everything's back to normal. But I won't reduce the visual look. And the same question is, you know, when I look at, you know, when I got here, everybody went, well, you know, we want Swan Lake. And I went, well, you know, and some people thought I didn't like Swan Lake. Well, I was brought up with Swan Lake.
Yeah.
You know, both with the traditional one with the Royal Ballet, but then also I worked for 3 years on the modern one. You know, I staged it in on Broadway. You know, so, you know, I worked with Matthew Bourne's Swan Lake for 3 years. So Swan Lake in general.
Right.
We did a new production in Japan, everything. So, but I won't do it here until we're bigger. Because, you know, quite a lot of people have either retired from the big cities here or we've got the Snowbirds. So they'll go and see ABT or the Kirov will be here
or Boston Ballet.
So they've seen it where visually it's breathtaking with all those swans.
Yeah.
Then they come here and they see like, you know, six swans on each side. They go, isn't it sweet our little ballet company does Swan Lake? And it becomes very provincial. There's nothing sweet about us. And there's certainly nothing provincial about us. You know, we're making real waves in the dance world in America.
And forgive me, but what I hear when you say this is that iron rod in you that said, oh, they didn't like me the first time at the Royal Ballet.
Yeah.
Watch this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's really what it takes to put a ballet company on, to build one, right?
Yes, yeah. No, it is. And I mean, you know, you go, again, we're coming in with this fantastic production of Giselle, one of the best in the world. And now we announced this, this last week we announced that we're going to have live music.
You're kidding.
So, and that's the icing on the cake. That's, you know, it's going to be just beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, and the dancers, you know, we've spoken a lot. It's boring talking about me, but look at the dancers and look what they've achieved. They've never, I mean, you know, it's young, the company's young, but, you know, I auditioned something like 150 people for probably 5-8 places.
Wow.
The money that the dancers here get is just terrible. They get next to nothing. They, you know, they have to get other jobs, or they have their parents still have to pay, you know, to help them live here. But they're here because of the ballets, and because they're having these opportunities that they could never have dreamt about.
Right.
You know, and they've come on. They've done more to date than I really when I first got here. They, you know, I was offered a 3-year contract, and I said, well, no, it's going to take 3 years just to change it around, and then I need to then...
Right, then we'll first take it off, right.
So if you look what they've achieved already in 2 years, you know, they, a year after I took over, they were on the front page of the art section of the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we were mentioned again in the New York Times a few months ago. So they've really have risen to all the challenges, and it's difficult, and you know, for them, it's they're learning ballets now. Last week they finished learning the ballet that's going to go on in February.
Wow.
They're rehearsing.
Oh my God.
You know, everything
right.
is, but
right.
they thrive on it. But I have to look after them.
Yes.
I have to be careful not to push them too much.
Right.
But they're really just. They're very committed, and I really couldn't do anything without them. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line.
This is wonderful. This is so wonderful. I like to ask, first of all, if there's anything I didn't ask you that I should have.
No, I think we've covered.
Then the other thing I like to ask is there anything that you would say about what it's like to live a life that's dedicated to an art?
I think it's, you have to believe in it, you have to sacrifice an awful lot. It's, in the ballet world, you train, you know, I was different, but, you know, people start at 3 years old, and they train till they're, say, 18.
Right.
They join a company, and they maybe go till they're 30, 35, if they're lucky.
Right.
So the amount of training to actually, you know, don't join this profession if you think you're going to make millions. But those moments on stage where that is priceless.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, I one of my moments is, you know, I loved dancing at Covent Garden. The curtain would go up in this beautiful auditorium. I danced at the Met, and it was a totally different thing. I didn't like dancing at the Met. The curtain went up, and it was just like so high, and the pit was so wide that you didn't feel
the audience. Yeah.
You know.
So you're someone who dances. Even if you're not looking at them, you're constantly aware that they are there.
Yeah.
And you feel them.
Some people say it's cheap.
It's cheap? What does that mean?
Well, I was all like...
Oh, no.
Mr. Showbiz.
It's funny. I was thinking something else. I was thinking that you feel the reaction.
Yeah, no, you do.
And that you feed each other, right? The audience feeds the performance.
Yeah, no, it is. And if you've got that much... And this is what's so wonderful about here, is at the FSU, at the Opera House, the Van Wezel, you have that.
They're very intimate spaces.
So, I mean, there's those moments. So it's just the magical, but it's all the sweat and the blood and the tears to get you for that, you know.
Yeah, for that moment.
5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And there are times when you can't remember that because...
You can't remember what you're doing it for.
It's just so difficult.
Yeah.
But
well, because those moments are often far and few between.
Yeah. I mean, but I think that it's... For me, it's the best art form because you've got, you know, the... You interpret the music through your body, you know. So you look at the times when you know you could have, I don't know, Benoit or Picasso would have designed something, and the Stravinsky's music or Prokofiev's music. So you've got already two of the great people, and you know, and they were all connected with dance. You know, when you think going back, you know, 100 years when Diaghilev set up the Ballet Russe. Mm-hmm. No one's ever captured that again, because he literally had all the top people there. You know, when we were very, very close with Dame Alicia Markova, and she joined Diaghilev and the Ballet Russe when she was like 14. So, you know, she would be there, and she'd be having a piano lesson, and Stravinsky would be there giving her the piano lesson. Matisse would be drawing... on the lycra that she was going to
be wearing. He was designing the costume.
And this
was natural.
Yeah. This was natural.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was like, you know, like, look, so a great, great man who I love to death is Roland Petit, the French choreographer. I mean, he's just a genius. 18, he went up, he knocked on this door, and it was Picasso's house, and he went, I'm a young choreographer. I would like to use, you know, one of your paintings as a design. And he invited him in. He took a painting off the wall. He said, take that, copy it, and bring it back.
Oh, my God.
And you've got that connection. or like, he made this wonderful ballet called Génome de l'Amour. And it was Cocteau's scenario and design. And I've worked with Mr. Petit on this. And you start off... Nowadays, you start off and you teach it with no music. So you just got a pulse and the connection between the two dancers.
Wow.
And then you put the music on afterwards because he choreographed this ballet to a jazz-type music. And Cocteau came in the day before the premiere and went, I can't bear this music anymore, change it. And he said, you know, Mr. Petit must have been frantic. And Cocteau went, well, how long is it? Okay, this music's the same length, just put that on. And he used Bach organ. And it's difficult to explain to people because it fits like a glove.
Oh, my God.
He couldn't have made it to fit that music any better. It is and it just came, you know, because Cocteau suddenly went,
oh, no, not this.
Yeah.
I love that
story. So all those people are just, you know...
They're connected. Yeah. And I don't mean connected to one another. I mean they're connected to something larger.
Yeah. So, and I think dance can bring all those things can circle around dance. You know, you can have an actor on stage, you can have singers.
Well, really, that's what Contact is.
Yeah, in April, we're doing the Christopher Wheeldon piece, which we have the pianist and we have two opera singers. So we're going to start off the season with the orchestra, and then we go to this. And we're doing also, again, it's a minute and a half long, is a solo in February, and I'm going to get a violinist to play it. But this solo is called The Dragonfly. And Anna Pavlova made this solo up. And then what happened was my wife, she recreated it, and she got a dancer from Pavlova's company to coach her, and Dame Alicia Markova to coach her. And now she's going to give it to our dancers to do.
Wow.
And it's only that short, but it is historically, and it's the most authentic version of it there is. It's the same as when, you know, you look at the ballets like, for instance, the Dying Swan,
mm-hmm.
Fokine's Dying Swan, which was made on Pavlova. Well, that's a treasure. And people do it all over the place now,
but it
shouldn't be.
Yes.
Margaret was asked many times to do it and would never do it. She felt the same, it had to be. And then suddenly she said she was going to do it, but she needed to make sure that it was the correct version. So she went to Dame Alicia Markova and she went, oh, well, yes, of course, I never thought about that. But yes, I'll
coach you.
Coach you. And what happened was Fokine choreographed it for Pavlova.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Dame Alicia was young, he made a different version for her. So the connection went Fokine, Markova, Maggie.
Yeah.
You know, now, I don't think she'll teach that to anybody.
You don't?
Because it was a special thing, and that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
You've got to keep, you know, maybe in a few years' time or not, I don't know, but that, you know, like Dame Alicia Markova didn't teach it to everybody.
Everybody, that's right. So she'll wait. She'll wait in case she finds the person
The same as the dragonfly is a special thing to pass
that's
on.
Right. Ian, this has been just wonderful. So why don't we just encourage everybody to come out?
I guess this is the start of my third year, and mm-hmm. it's been a lot of hard work, but we've achieved tremendous things.
Yeah.
Frustrations. The biggest frustration I have is that people have been so kind and opened their hearts or been very supportive and complimentary. And they'll come up and they'll say, oh, you know, you're doing a fantastic job. And I maybe, you know, have said on so many occasions, oh, you know, what did you come and see? Oh, no, we've heard.
Oh, dear.
So that's my frustration.
Yes.
People are hearing it,
yeah.
But they're not actually coming and witnessing themselves.
Yes. Well, come and be the people who can say, we saw it.
Yeah. This season got to be one of the most exciting and groundbreaking seasons than any other company in America, really.
That's great.
So, and that's purely, you know, that's nothing to do with me, that's just because people are supporting me. And the dancers are wonderful and can do it.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's got nothing to do with you, but fine.
Fine.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Okay, good, thank you.
And there you have Ian Webb, who makes the point so graphically when he says that he not only knew that he had to hide his love of ballet, his desire to dance, the fact that he was dancing, he didn't have to hide it from himself, but he didn't tell his best friend. So, and luckily for Ian, although there was quite a lot of conflict around his dance, he was able to keep that part of himself, use that part of himself, become that man. He didn't have to hide that from himself. That's an extraordinary thing and a wonderful gift. Most of us are unable to make that choice. Most of us choose, our unconscious chooses for us, of course, to hide those characteristics, qualities, desires, interests, which are going to get us in trouble in the world. Ian fortunately didn't have to do that, and not only fortunately for him, but fortunately for us, because as you heard, he is the mover and shaker behind this extraordinary season coming up at the Oslo. So again, if you happen to be in Florida, or you'd like to make a trip, if you're interested at all in ballet or in musical theater, hurry on down. It's incredibly worth the trip. So I'm closing down the show now, but I can't close the show without thanking Josh Hackney, who's on his way here to make sure that this show sounds as good as it possibly can, and to help me make whatever electronic recording, computing decisions I have to make. I hope that you heard something that you can use today, something that interested you or compelled you or tickled you or amused you, something that will bring you back. Because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retired. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang, so you won't hear